Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to another special episode of IndiePod, where we get to talk to the people behind some of our favorite indie games. Today we have Eric, the developer behind the upcoming title known as Lucid. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could make it. Definitely, this game looks like one that I would very much be into, so I'm happy to have you on. But one of the things that we always like to do here is get started with the actual people, not the game specifically. We'll get to it, of course. Don't worry, people. But first, we need to know you, Eric. Who are you? How did you get into game creation? And why are you here today?
Okay, so I'm Eric. I got into game creation in a pretty roundabout way. I mean, I've always loved games growing up. I had a SNES since I was 6 years old. I've been a Nintendo fanboy. I had every Nintendo system, to now with the Switch.
What's your favorite game?
Oh, you bastard. That's like, what's my favorite song?
I know, it's a tough one.
My favorite game, I can say one of my all-time favorite games is definitely A Link to the Past.
That was a good one.
My first game. It was like the first time. That's probably what got me hooked on gaming in general, is like that first immersive world. And I knew, like, I still probably know to this day, like the back of my hand, like I knew where every rock was, every warp point. I lived in that like dark light world. Man, I love that game. And it was also like the first game I played with my dad for a while. Like, he did like a dungeon, and I do a dungeon. But once we got to the dark world, he kind of checked out.
That's good, man. You got to love those bonding moments. That's one of the big things about video games, that memorable moment, especially if you have someone that you're growing up with and getting to experiencing that with it. So I love it.
Definitely. Yeah, that was like, I can remember it clearly. So for now, yeah, I'll say that's my favorite game. It's got one of those great moments.
All right. So that's your favorite game. That's where you got started when it comes to like your love of video games. But how did you get started when it comes to saying, I'm going to create these things?
This one is surprisingly, like, I can pinpoint it. I come from with an architectural background. I went to school for architecture.
Okay.
I worked as an architect for 10 plus years. So it was on my last, or maybe second to last, year at school, and I was in studio. And for those who don't know, you basically live in studio as an architecture major. And it was a late night, and it was like 2 a.m. or something, and I was taking a little internet break. And somehow or another, I stumbled upon, I might have actually been using that website, stumble upon. Anyway, I stumbled upon this pixel art game, which would come to be known as Iconoclast. It was a demo, and I downloaded it and I played it, and it was a beautiful pixel art. It was like really like crisp controls, like it was really polished. And I'm sitting there like, what is this? Looked into it, and it was like a one-man dev studio, and I was like, what? It blew my mind that could be made by one person, like music, like everything. And I reached out to him and I said, hey man, how did you get started? I'm blown away, super impressed. I would love to know more. And he just pointed me in the direction of, I believe it was a Construct at the time he was using. And he just gave me some pointers. And that was the moment where I like looked into it. And I picked up Game Maker Studio a few months later. I started doing pixel art. And it's just kind of snowballed from there. It just... Lucid, the iteration of Lucid that is out there now is like way different than what it started off from. It was like a bunch of little tiny vignettes of whatever coding I had learned. Like, I learned how to jump, I learned how to move, oh, I can shoot things. Oh, collisions, awesome. And it was it just kind of built and built and built. And that was like 10 years ago. Then I went on a hiatus because it was destroying my life in the sense that it was all I wanted to do. And at that time, it was just like not an option. I had to actually work. So I took a hiatus and came back to it eventually. And about a year and a half, a little more than that, we're here now.
Wow. All right. So would you say that, you know, you worked on it a good amount that first half before the hiatus, right? Mm-hmm. But that was more of you kind of like tinkering with ideas, coming to fruition of like learning those pieces, you know, the elements that create the game. But 100%. This last year and a half or so is really you taking that knowledge and running with it after you had more of a, you know, you're in more of a headspace and had that time to really create it.
I think that'd be fair. I got to a point before the hiatus where I had like this very solid vision of what I wanted it to be. And mm-hmm. it was very much more a traditional Metroidvania. Like more by the books, you know, Metroidvania. And it was great. I loved it. I was very proud of it. And but then when I did come back, I was out walking the dog with my fiance, and she just kind of said, like, whatever happened to that thing you were making, Lucid? I was like, oh, and I put it on break. She's like, well, you were really happy. I was like kind of down in the dumps because I was not super happy with the architectural career. And she's like, you were very happy when you were making that. And it was my favorite thing you were making. Like, you should pick it up again. I'm like, you know what? I've been tossing around the idea of learning Unity. So I said, yeah, I'll try to bring it back through Unity. So I learned Unity as I was updating Lucid. So it was, I was redoing animations. I had gotten, I think, pretty much better at pixel art over the time, because I didn't stop doing pixel art. I kept doing like little animations throughout the hiatus, but so I redid all the art, redid the music, a new engine, new this, that, and the other thing. And at this time I had just finished Hades, and Hades was the first time I in a long time like I got into a video game, for lack of a better term, like a cinematic experience video game, like a God of War or an Uncharted. It felt good to be like, oh man, this is a video game. And it really made an imprint, and it made me rethink a lot of what Lucid could be, what it was, what I enjoyed about games. And there was a massive overhaul to the systems and gameplay loop, and
it sounds like it really made a big impact, and you kind of overhauled the entire project because of just being in a different place, different time, right? Like you took that
pretty much
that large break and were able to kind of realize more of what you wanted out of the game in a different sense, which I think is interesting because I was, you know, we'll talk about the game in a second, but one of my questions was going to be around that, like it kind of being not your typical Metroidvania, even though it is tagged as that.
Yes. But
we can get there in a second. What I first want to touch on though is, you know, there's a long stream of time here, and a lot of people will get into this rut of, I don't know that rut's the right word, but there is a part-time versus full-time conundrum when it comes to game creation, because a lot of people need funding and sometimes they don't have it or have a means to it while they're working on it. Is this something that you've been doing, you know, on the side, like as a passion project for just whenever you're off the clock, or did you end up leaving that architect's job?
Well, it's yes, for the majority, for most of this time, it has been a side project. It's been after hours. It's been all consuming every free moment. I had just recently, however, like the day before the Steam page dropped and the teaser trailer dropped, it was my last day at my office job. I had put my 2 weeks in, and I'm now officially going full-time indie dev.
Wow. How does it feel? I mean, so I'm sure exciting, but also like, are there, you know, nerves of you're walking away from the more stable position there, right?
Of course. Oh, definitely. It is seeing the numbers just go down is horrifying. Yeah. But it was just, I'm told it, there's like a visible like aura shift and like a way less, not depressed or just not sad, like way more energy and positivity. Yeah. In my mental health for sure. As much as I love architecture and the design process, the field itself was it was oil and water. It was not for me at all.
Yeah.
And it finally feels like I'm doing what I was like meant to do. It feels like everything I've ever learned was like, it's finally like coming to a head, and it just feels like I'm in the zone, and I'm very happy.
Wow. That is, I'm very happy for you. First off,
thanks, man.
I think that it's super admirable whenever I hear individuals who are like, I'm stepping away from this stable thing to do something that might be, you know, a crazy suggestion to others. Like for me, I don't know that I would have the same mental health change, because mine would just be constant panic about the fact that I don't have that job. But and granted, I'm sure there is, you know, an element of that, but like it's great to hear that you are finding more of a purpose in this and finding more of a freedom when it comes to making that choice. Because like, even if this doesn't work out, it sounds like this was the right choice for a specific reason.
Yes, 100%. Before, I'd wake up and like slowly slump out of bed and just be miserable all day. Mm-hmm.
And that's no way to live.
It's not. Yeah, it's just it's not healthy. And now I wake up earlier. I'm working, excited to do what I'm doing, to talk who I'm talking to. I've met so many people. Like everything about the creating Lucid, I enjoy. And I stay up later. It's like I'm working more hours, but you're right. There's like a purpose and a drive that was just never there. And
It's a hard topic, because this is a little bit of a tangent, but a lot of people discussed as of recent, and it comes up every so often, the idea or the topic of crunch, and people will yell at a lot of studios because they, you know, there's this force where you have to complete XYZ. But then there's also the side of like those indie studios or other people who are just like, well, I'm doing that because I want to though.
Right.
Right. And there's like, I've always had this idea that there's a difference when it comes to crunching down and trying to do more than like what you probably should. Is like, sometimes that's just crazy inspiration and excitement for the thing, because now especially you have that fire under you because this is your job, right? But two is because you really like doing it, so why not spend more time doing, you know, like it's the same concept of like doing a job and then spending hours doing a hobby, right? Like this is the hobby, so why wouldn't it be potentially combined to create a longer ramp of time?
I am a no stranger to crunch, and it is not, it's just not fair. It's not, I don't think it's right. It's I've worked in architecture offices where the people who are they leave at a regular time, and it's up to you to, it just has to get done. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, this isn't my house. This isn't my firm. This is, I don't want to be here.
Right.
It's just a different world when it's your thing, and it's like, it's just an extension of you. And I don't ever feel like a crunch is a thing. I mean, I guess it's a matter of choice. Like, you said, those indie studios, if I ever have a studio of any size, no crunch, it would never be something like you are forced to stay. Like if you have the drive to stay, go amazing. Like I have it too. Also, practice what you preach. Like if you are expecting other people to be there, like you should be there.
Yes.
Things like that.
It's tough because it's a really slippery slope no matter which side you lean on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a lot of people have very valid points on both sides. It's just, it's really tough. I think the main factor is like, you can't force someone to do it, and
right.
you can't, it just has to be a fair playing field, right?
Exactly.
That being said, coming back to, you know, your plight in this world and creating this game, I just wanted to you know, you talked about how with Iconoclast, you found out, wow, this is a one person team. That's amazing. That's incredible. Are you staying on that same lane of saying this is all me, or are there others helping out in this process?
I've considered myself a solo indie dev, and I try to maintain that. It's very hard giving any sort of leeway for something so close to me. But that said, I have a few contractors help with some like promo art. Same thing with some music. It's a lot of external like contractor work, but it's definitely something that they will be in the credits and called out, and thanks, great, very, very many thank yous to them.
Of course. But the majority of what you're doing when it comes to the game has been more of a one man show.
Yes, I would say that. I don't want to discredit any of the help that.
No,
I've
of course
gotten.
Not.
It's I would not be here without them. But it's kind of my the show is the Lucid show, and I have some people who are experts in their field that like to help out. For example, I have a good friend, Aaron. He's a part of the Discord. He's a mod in the Discord, the Lucid Discord, and he's a fantastic storyteller and writer. And having his a second eye on ideas, like helping expand ideas and things of that nature, very much help. But again, at the end of the day, I go back to my desk, and I'm the one putting it all together and doing the art and making the story work and filtering it all together and coding it. And so I still consider the Matt Black Studio as a solo indie dev.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, a lot of work. So congrats. The game, from what I've seen, looks pretty incredible from a mostly, you know, one person team with obviously the help included from other areas. But that being said, let's actually dive into the game itself now. Let's talk a little bit about Lucid, right? I always like to kick this off with just, let's set the stage. For those who don't know anything about the game, how would you sell it to them, right? What is your elevator pitch?
So, elevator pitch. Oh, these are so much fun. How do I boil down thousands of hours of work into multiple sentences?
That's basically it.
So, this is what we have so far. And speaking of, Aaron helped me formulate this. But
see, there you go.
This is what we got. Here it is. So, Lucid is a heartfelt adventure that sees young Owen on a quest to explore a shattered world and fulfill a solemn promise. That's the clip. That's the little.
Okay.
Clip.
Okay. All right. Let's dive a little bit deeper, right?
Mm.
Who is this character, and kind of what exactly is this story, or this, you know, what they're trying to do? Maybe a little bit deeper. Obviously, you don't want to give too much away, but like, who are we, and what are we effectively doing in this world?
So we'll be playing as Owen. He's a young boy. He's an aspiring sentinel, and the sentinels are a one of three faiths in this world. And each faith kind of corresponds to each of the celestial giants, like, for lack of a better term, like deities. It's very much is inspired by the Link, the Legend of Zelda. That lore with the three goddesses.
To give you
a little bit of a basis. The Sentinels, they are a dwindling faction after the Great Fall, when Troika, the serpent, he struck Aelo, and he ended up killing the Lucid Giant. he was shattered. And on that day, like all the Sentinels were attacked by another, the Brethren of Ash, and they were the Serpent's faith, and they did like a mass attack on many of the Sentinels. So they're a dwindling race.
Okay.
At some point, a young baby Owen was discovered by his father, Hall. He's kind of like a Jedi master to Owen's Padawan.
Okay.
At some point, you are given the task to revive the lucid giant. So you'll be going around the world collecting lucid crystals, essentially like pieces of the lucid giant's heart, and putting it back together in hopes to resurrect the giant and bring back balance to the world.
Wow. Sounds like a large task for Owen.
It's a big one. It's a gigantic task.
All right. Before we dive into like mechanics and talk about kind of what you're doing in this game, I did want to just point to one thing that you mentioned in Twitter. You had said that you are creating with this Lucid game somewhat of a mashup of the games that you love and games that you grew up with, right? Or have been inspired by. So I wanted to just see exactly kind of from different areas, what games are you pulling from?
Great question. I would say some of my favorites and the ones I loved playing growing up being Mega Man X,
yes.
Super Metroid, Legends of Zelda, a little bit of Doom 2016/Hades.
Okay.
And with a heavy dash of Celeste.
Interesting. Okay. I could definitely see a lot of like the Celeste, the Mega Man X, the Metroid. Take me through a little bit more of what you mean by the Doom reference.
Yeah, that's usually the eyebrow goes up when I say Doom. Uh-huh. They're like, what? Uh-huh. Why? So far the game is an overworld Metroidvania.
Yes.
With a handful of dungeons that you can enter. And when you do, they become kind of like these Mega Man X-like levels. Almost like you've just selected Robot
the specific
master.
Boss to fight. Yeah,
exactly. So you go in and all of a sudden now you're went from an open world to a Mega Man X level. But it's not just a Mega Man X level. It's also a Mega Man X level with dashes of a Legend of Zelda dungeon and also a dash of those Doom/Hades rooms. So you'll be put in a room that becomes kind of this gauntlet of like waves of enemies and environmental hazards, and you need to maneuver around and position yourself and like take out these hordes of enemies in a very quick and nimble fashion, rotating through your multiple crystal arts, basically your weapons, on the fly, and know what these enemies are, their patterns, what they're weak to, that's where the Doom Hades kind of, you're locked in here with me kind of situation.
Yeah. Okay. No, that makes sense. I like it. I love a lot of what you're pulling from. Most of those games are, my top favorites. I do want to talk about the combat because I think that, platforming, the combat, that seems like a big focus when it comes to this game, obviously.
Big time.
When you're showing these videos or you're looking through the Steam page, the character has a number of different forms of combat. There's like shooting, there's this like hammer, a sword, you're able to dash and things like that. Like I believe you mentioned that crystal arts, I believe those are all of the weapons that I'm referencing to. Can you give us a little bit of explanation on like what those are, how you're using those in the game? Is this something like Mega Man X where you don't have those and then you go to an area, defeat an enemy or a boss and then get that type of thing? Like, what does that look like?
Very much so. So the crystal arts are, you're like on point. You pretty much have it.
Nice.
So these crystal arts are kind of there will be five, and each one A little bit of lore behind it is the Sentinels all kind of like one Sentinel usually focuses on one type of like weapon mastery. However, gotcha. The unique thing about Owen is he can do all five. So these crystal arts he ends up learning, they kind of act like the treasure, like the big treasure in a Legend of Zelda dungeon. Mm-hmm. But they're also like Mega Man X weapons in that each one has like a rock, paper, scissor sort of dynamic to the boss gotcha. And dungeon you're in. And not definitely not in the do triple damage and that's it. It's more it'll put you in advantageous positioning or get you out of attack patterns more easily or just put your hitbox in a, like a better angle to hit the enemy kind of situation. Right. So it's much more, a little bit more dynamic, I believe, in that sense.
Okay.
So I had a shower thought. It's something in the Discord that it's become kind of like a little joke about me. I have all my ideas in the shower. And okay. I was playing Mario Odyssey, and I had just recently played that Spider-Man game, and it just clicked in my head that like combat and movement have to be equally as fun.
Yeah.
So I smashed them together. Every crystal art, it expands mobility and enhances combat. So each one picks like a cardinal direction for the most part, and it expands your mobility in that way. So the spear okay. is up down, the sword is left right, the axe is kind of more of like a whole circular hitbox with like a little bit of a lift, kind of like Herbie's hammer attack mm-hmm, and like Kirby mm-hmm. Superstar.
Yeah.
So everything, it'll expand your movement and also give you more options when you're fighting.
Cool. Is this something where, you know, based on it being similar to like a Mega Man X style, I feel like the answer might be no, but are these weapons that are, you know, say like RPG style upgradable, or they're able to level up, or using them more often Ooh. Will result in XYZ results?
I have not revealed it, but I will let Ooh. You know. Yes, there are plans for upgradable trees.
Oh, very cool.
There's light RPG mechanics in Lucid.
Nice. Okay. Interesting. All right. And just to pull back, because, you know, you mentioned that there are the five different things, you seem to be getting them as kind of that Zelda style, like the big treasure chest. You learn mm-hmm, that stuff, that crystal art while you're in that dungeon or whatever world that you're in. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's your base mechanic then?
Base mechanics would be, dashing, pulsing, basically your lemons, your little shooty pellets.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And then you get one of the crystal arts like very early on. It's like in the prologue, like tutorial kind of level.
Okay.
You'll have one. So the sword is essentially a base.
Okay, so yeah, very much your starter. Because one of my questions that I would talked about earlier before was the idea of this being initially kind of a Metroidvania, and you still have elements of that, but you're also doing this choose your own adventure style when it comes yes. to where you go.
Yes.
And so I just kind of wanted to talk about like some of the issues or the concerns or just the ideas that went through your head and went through the development process of this, because going through something like that, if you're trying to keep a Metroidvania world, you usually have the idea of you unlock this weapon, so now you can break down this wall, or you unlock mm-hmm, this mm-hmm. whatever, so you can double jump to an area. Is there still that same kind of concept in it, or has it gone yes. more the way of, okay, so can you walk me through a little bit of that, like maybe an example or so?
Totally. So an aspect of the mobility that we haven't touched on yet are there's these for people who haven't seen it, but I know you have, there's these, I call them lucid lanterns, like these Celeste nodes, those little nodes where if you hit them, you replenish your jump or mm-hmm. another usage. Mm-hmm. So every crystal art, if you slash into one, you can then do another slash. So essentially you can chain your crystal arts into each other as long as you're hitting these nodes, and you basically connect the dots and you can move vast distances.
Right.
That said, there are a few walls that can only be essentially locked doors. Like you can slash through a certain wall. They're called dash through walls.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get through them without a certain crystal art, or even some walls can only be broken with the crystal axe. Like they're big and chunky, and you can only break them with the big strong axe. Mm-hmm. So there are still lock and keys that restrict where you can go.
Okay.
But like any good Metroidvania, there are sequence breaking. There is like speed routes.
Nature. Very good. I'm glad to hear that. That was actually going to be one of my next questions. Is I wanted to know. I love hearing that developers have speed running already in mind.
Yes.
Because one, it's just I love watching people break games. It's so satisfying to watch.
Games done quick. I got addicted to that.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things. I love when Games Done Quick shows up. One, because it's for such a great cause, but two, because it's just you get to see so many cool speed runs and things that you never thought would be possible. But that being said, it sounds like you have that speed running in mind. Are you doing anything specific to try and enhance that, or do you have, like you said, that you have a Discord community? Are there people who are interested in that already? Like, what does that look like for you? What are you planning when it comes to the idea of speed running?
It's funny you say that. Actually, the speed running aspect of the game hasn't been one explored publicly all too much. But to your question, I have put a few incentives to incentivize the player to try to go fast, and it's like a little carrot at an end of the stick. For example, in the dungeons right now, I'm working on a system where if you can essentially do a room perfectly, whatever that is, it is connected, getting every Lucid Lantern node like under a certain amount of time and without hitting the ground, you'll get a buff at the end of said room. And as you can keep doing it, you'll keep getting a longer and longer buff. And if you can essentially get to the boss with said buff. So if you're very nimble and quick and you know the route and you're a speed runner, you can then tank the boss with a huge power buff and just melt health bars.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love to hear it. Going to just talk about like more when it comes to these crystal arts, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned things like in the Steam page, specific challenges to master those arts. Now, are there going to be designed like, little tiny objectives with them? So I'm thinking more of like, especially when it comes to that potential leveling or the RPG side, are there things where it's, like ability to hit 3 or plus enemies with the same weapon, or kill certain enemies with a weapon chained or combos like that? Is that kind of where you're going with mastering that specific crystal arts, or are you more talking about being able to use the right one for the right boss and get through easier?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Master the art is definitely there will be kind of like epilogue. I love when games have you revisiting areas and there's like an epilogue story to, like, just because you left the place doesn't mean like everything's done. Like you go back and there's more to do. And it's also a place to really, there is like the extra hard, extra challenging gauntlet or course, whatever that side quest may be, that highlights the use of the crystal art you've gotten. And in that sense, you are mastering that crystal art by maneuvering and combating and getting whatever the quest is asking you to get or whatever reward that may be.
Right.
And then on the other side, it's also mastering by there is a component in the game where you get like little shards, kind of like souls and Dark Souls, and also an upgrade item where, as of now, the idea is you need upgrade item and a certain amount of shards, and you can take it to a person and or shrine to then upgrade it to your choice of what do you want, what permutation or like modularity do you want on your crystal art, and you can choose one of two. So everyone will have a branch of A or B.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So everyone's cool. Owen will be their own little Owen.
Yeah, exactly. I like the idea of it. We just talked right before this about speedrunning, and obviously that's not going to be your average time when you're thinking of like completion, right? But what is the average time that you expect a player to be in this world?
Oh, man. That's so hard to say at this point. I would love any there's my little pup. I would say that a person will be playing Lucid for about the same amount of time they played Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight's a pretty good frame of reference.
All right. Interesting. Are you going to also have the idea of like additional, you know, bosses in certain areas, kind of that same Hollow Knight feel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on how successful a future Kickstarter will be. But yes, there's already ideas of who can be a boss, who should be a boss, where they go, things. Yeah, definitely on the mind.
Interesting. I love to hear it. Now, my next question, which funny enough is about kind of like when we can expect this, is interesting based on your mention of just a possible Kickstarter, right? Let's talk a little bit, because I see on Steam it says just a generic coming soon, which I doubt is probably the case of like soon when I think of soon. but it, you know, what are your plans? Kind of obviously you're not going to give a date because that would be crazy, but like how's development going? Where do you feel, you know, your process is at? Are we like, is this something we can see within the year? Is this something might be a few years from now? Like, what are you trying to push for?
Definitely. I've been pretty open with the like this year's roadmap on a few social medias. So right now it's full steam ahead on creating a demo. I was just before our call, I was doing some debugging and working on it. And so it's a demo will precede a Kickstarter by a few weeks, maybe to be determined. But the Kickstarter itself, we're aiming for early third quarter, around there.
Okay.
That's what I would like to hit. That's when you can expect to have a vertical slice of the game, a little demo, and then a Kickstarter following suit. And then from there, depending on how successful the Kickstarter
will determine
how much more content we will see in the game, which will then, of course, dictate how much longer it'll take. But a conservative guess is probably, I originally had 2024. Who knows, maybe with a really successful Kickstarter I can get some programming help, a little more art asset help, and expedite things. You never know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is very exciting. I definitely wish you all the best when it comes to your Kickstarter and your future release entirety.
Thank you so much.
I can't wait to see what comes out of the studio. But that being said, let's wrap this up with my final question that I ask everyone. And that's just some general advice for those in the indie space. Now, I talked about this before we officially started recording, but let's use it as a chance for you to say, if you had just started on this project, let's even say, you know, like the 10 years ago or however before the hiatus, right? What would you have told yourself knowing what you know now?
I would have told myself, don't give up, keep going, and you can do it.
Okay.
That would be the very, very simple, short answer I would give myself.
I love it. I mean, there's a lot of truth in that, even though it seems very obvious. And like, there's a number of people who have come on here and they'll sometimes be like, and give an answer that feels like it's like, yeah, that's easy to say, but it's very true. Like, you really do have to give yourself that, that space to kind of breathe, but also you have to be able to push. 'Cause like, doing something like this is not easy. Indie development, especially if you're a solo individual, or even if you have a few select people on your team, mm-hmm. it's not easy to do all of the things that are in here, right?
There's a lot of hats you got to wear.
Yeah, there's even a lot of hats. Even outside of
the devving process.
Exactly. And that's like, even if your dream is to create a game, like that's only a slice of the mm-hmm. work you have to do to then make it successful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because you then have to market it. You then have to, yes. you know, deal with legal things. You then have to deal with where is it going to actually land. It's not just like, I created a video game and I'm done. I'm successful. Like, that's yes. just not how it works. And even no. that part is very hard as it is. So sometimes it is just reassuring yourself, don't give up. You can do this.
Yeah, that's because the idea floated through my head of like, I needed that time for sure. Like Lucid would be so different if I hadn't stopped.
Right.
Like I wouldn't have had that reprocessing time and rejigging the mechanics and all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say don't stop in the sense of like, you know, keep going, grind. It's be persistent, you know, take your time. I guess maybe that's more accurate. Give up, take your time. You can do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because there was that hiatus, you stopped, but it's not that you stopped forever. You ended up coming back with a new mindset, with, you mm-hmm. know, more rested eyes to yeah. design the game in potentially a much better way that will result in a more successful game.
I like to think so, and I like to hope so.
I hope so as well. For those listening, Lucid is currently in development. So if any of it sounded interesting, you got to go head over to their Steam page, make sure you wishlist the game. And also, depending on when you're listening to this, there might be a Kickstarter live. Of course, us at IndiePod will end up retweeting it and letting people know. But if you're listening to this, go check it out and, you know, just back the game if you're interested, because yeah. it sounds like a cool one.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks to the entire Lucid community. Couldn't be here without you. You guys are fantastic. Much love.